Welcome to Discovering and Sharing Shuswap History.
Sunnybrae Community Association began as a vision for locals Doris and Ernest Needham. Attendance for their home events such as card parties, crafts, and Sunday school was outgrowing their home, and there was a need for a central facility to expand their community service. So in 1953, the SEA was formed by Charles Mobley, Edwin Hacking, Lois and Vi Berger, Carl Nicholson, Ernie Needham, and Harold Gee. Many of these families are still residents and active volunteers in the community today. At the time, the annual membership was set to a grand total of $1 per year. The same year, on the 11th of March, the Salmon Arm School District gifted land to the SCA, as well as Doran R. Rollier of Tappan donating land for a net sale of $25 in March of 1954. Members of the community all pitched in, making contributions to cover the cost. Fundraisers were also organized to help fund the association. Our historical meeting minutes, for example, show the SCA raising $13.44 at the Glen Eden auction, running a refreshment stand in September of 1954. A big thanks also goes out to 10 women from the community in October of 1954, cleaning, stuffing, and storing 50 chickens for sale at the Carter's Agency. Dances were also held on a Saturday once a month, and women from the community would circle the neighborhood, collecting donations of eggs to make refreshments for the dance. The building on the SCA land at the time had no running water. At community events, residents would pack water in metal creamery cans. At community events, residents would pack water in metal creamery cans down to the hall from way up Mobley Road. One member's memory that I personally loved was during board meetings. Each member would have to bring down a block of wood to the hall to keep the fire going. By 1957, the Badminton Club had started. This is a club which is still involved at the hall today, meeting up twice a week and run by local Joan Clark. Cards, bingo, swimming, and painting classes also became successfully attended events in the community. In 1959, our records show the Joy Club keeping up community attendance with games, bonfires, sing-alongs, and stories. Thanks goes out to Mac Turner of the Turner family at Sunnybrae Vineyards and Winery, and Jim Farrell for providing material, labor, skates, and sticks to provide an outdoor hockey rink for the locals. In the 60s, locals organized an annual auction and pie social in the fall. Dean Trenham was the auctioneer and volunteered his time. People brought along garden veggies, paintings, furniture, homemade jams, and these were all auctioned off to raise money for the SCA. After the main auction, the leftover pies were sold by the slice with coffee or auctioned off for people to take home. Other events in the 60s included turkey dinners, weekly whist card nights every Friday with prizes, and the Young People's Club. There were craft afternoons where parents came together to teach knitting, embroidery, crochet, and crafts. There were several ball games and practice days. In 1969, the minutes recorded that the youth skunked the adults at baseball, taking place at Garrett's Field near Badger Road. The parents would also throw an end-of-school celebration, most kids being students at Carlin School. This would start with a ball game at Garrett's Field and end with a wiener roast and picnic on the beach, which is now known as Sunnybrae Park. In the 70s, the community continued to organize swimming lessons, which now held Red Cross swimming tests. Sports Day took place at the hall for the children in the summer and was later held close to where the Bible camp is situated. There was a joint community picnic started in 1977, where locals from Tappan, Carlin, and Whitehall got together for the day. The Tappan Co-op provided buns, wieners, and cream, a contribution and support that is still given to our community today. Christmas concerts were also held in the winter, with songs, choirs, skits, and plays. Santa would come by the end of the night with bags of candy for the children. The SEA still played a very active role in the community in the 80s. Locals Karen Berger and Ayla Power started a weekly play school for the children, which took place Wednesday mornings. Minutes show a generous donation of $15 to the association. Hall rental at the time was set to $25 for the day, and amongst the community activities, it still played host to a public rental space for parties and weddings. In June of 1984, the Sunnybrae seniors also purchased a double-wide mobile home for their community centre, and this further contributed to the community with events and gatherings. By now, cards, bingo, play school, exercise class, painting class were still well attended by the community. Minutes recorded that the 55-member Tappan 4-H Sewing Club received a provincial BC grant of $86.25 to help continue their great work in the community. By the 90s, the hall was seeing great attendance, with very active volunteers bringing a wealth of experiences to the surrounding community. And it was in the late 90s that some local residents created a very valuable and long-standing community event, the Sunnybrae Coffee House. In 1997, Gord Milne and Joan Robertson started one of the first community open mic coffee house nights in the Shuswap. All were welcome, with performers getting in for free and attendees paying $2 for admission, a cost that has only increased in a dollar since then. At 21 years old, the coffee house still remains to be one of the integral parts of the community life in Sunnybrae. Taking place on the second Saturday of each month, October through May, it continues to support local live music and provides a great opportunity for the community to gather at our hall. It was in the early 2000s, with flourishing community activity, that it was decided the hall needed to be extended. In an effort to keep it affordable, 15 locals expressed interest in volunteering for the job, with local Chris Clark agreeing to oversee the project. Chris made up the original drafts, which were finalized by Linda Franklin. Along with volunteers, including Ron Power of Power Auto Body, Ryan Tanimura of Tanimura Electric Limited, Garth Bowman, Phil Davies, and many others, they set to work in the year 2000. All the initial labor, material, and other financing was taken up by the volunteers, with granting and donations helping to finalize the project the following year. Records express thanks to Bigfoot Log Homes, Notchill Forest Products, Franklin Construction, Walpur Lumber for donations, and Laverne and Barry Turner, who volunteered to do the groundwork and prep. The community activity continued to bloom in the 2000s. In 2001, Hans Burl, Vi Berger, and Janet Cloutier received volunteer service awards from South Shuswap Community Society, as well as Chris Clark receiving the Volunteer of the Year award in 2002. In 2003, the SCA celebrated 50 years as an association, with a community barbecue, face painting, and Shuffles the Clown, courtesy of local Joan Clark. By 2004, clubs now included karate, arts, cards, badminton, ham radio, swimming, the coffee house, and the kids club. In 2010, the SCA board committed to raising funds for the hall interior renovations and exterior expansion to bring facilities up to date, with several upgrades to improve the facility's energy efficiency. Annual plant and book sales were a fundraising staple, along with the Harvest Dance with Shuswap band Birchbark, special dance fundraisers organized by several volunteers, Halloween nights with the Tappan Sunnybrae Fire Department, and grant applications, all finally led to an interior and exterior makeover that bring you the Sunnybrae Hall we see today. The SCA still continues to serve the community today, with a board of 8 volunteers and a very supportive Shuswap community. And it is volunteer and community work that keeps these central community facilities alive, providing a space for all in the Shuswap area to share. I'd like to thank Gail Burkett, Laura Burkett, Lois Penner, Chris Clark, Karen Berger, Vicky Green, and other past members of the association for helping to record, document, and collate all this wonderful history. And in memory of our very treasured volunteer, I'd like to conclude by adjourning this piece in memory of Hans Burrell of Mobley Road, a local community member who always took and enjoyed the opportunity to adjourn our general meetings.
Sally was born on a farm in Saskatchewan and moved to Salmon Arm in 1970 with her husband Jim Scales, who was born in Salmon Arm. Sally's parents were Ukrainian. Her father was born in Ukraine and emigrated in 1925 or so. And Sally's mother was Ukrainian, born in Saskatchewan. Both sides were farming people. When Sally was raised on the farm, her mother always told her, don't marry a farmer, marry a banker. When Sally finished nursing training in Saskatchewan, my feeling is that nursing was one of the three occupations that was open to women in the 1950s. She wanted to go somewhere unique, and that put her in Dawson City in Yukon. Dawson City in those days was about 200 First Nations people and 200 white people, including the manager of the Bank of Commerce, who was Jim Scales. When Sally was a nurse in Salmon Arm, there was a construction project going on at the hospital. He asked the other nurses and some of the staff at the hospital, what's going on there? And nobody seemed to know. So she, on one of her breaks, went to talk to the construction workers and got the full story of what was really happening, and decided that everybody should know that, just out of interest sake. So she wrote that up in a bit of a newsletter, attributed it. And she just loved to write and loved to inform people about what was happening. So that was her first Salmon Arm small publication. And then a much larger one was, there was a time in about 1973 when the Scales family owned a coin laundromat across from the fire hall. And tourists came in from all over the world to do their laundry. This was in the 1970s, and campsites in the Shuswap didn't have laundry machines. So people who were tent camping and people who were at some of the campsites, even with campers, they needed to do their laundry. So they came to the coin laundry, and they wanted to know what was happening in and around Salmon Arm. So Sally took it upon herself to write a little newsletter, more of a tourist guide, to hand out to people who came to visit. And that visitor's guide eventually spawned a newspaper called The Shopper's Guide. I don't think she really broke many stories off the top of my head, but she kept some issues alive or propelled some issues forward. Advocated things like Sunday shopping. In the 1970s, you couldn't operate a store on Sunday. And she felt that as Vancouver was moving towards having Sunday shopping, that Salmon Arm should also have Sunday shopping. Also in Salmon Arm in the 1970s, stores closed down for half a day on Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember which day. She was in favor of businesses being able to hold whatever hours they wanted. So that goes way back. She was a proponent of a woman's right to choose what happens for her reproductive health. She was in later on, Sally wanted people to have their will updated and filed because she heard too many stories of Shuswap residents dying intestate with no will. So she actually made up a will kit and sold those will kits at the newspaper office. She was outspoken in her way and progressive. When dying with dignity came up, she was in favor of dying with dignity, part because of her nursing training and the times she had spent in hospitals watching people die the death that they would not have chosen. Sally was always an early adopter of technology. She was the first person I knew who had a computer and an email address and a digital camera and a cell phone. And she liked buying computers for the newspaper office. So there were computerized typesetting equipment even in 1979, 1980, when a lot of small newspapers would not have had that. She was also an advocate for positions which other people didn't think were very popular. She was, and she took a lot of ribbing for being in favor of homeopathy, for being in favor of the conspiracy theory that the jet stream was actually poisons being put out by big pharmaceutical companies. And she took a lot of heat and a lot of public ribbing for those positions, but she stuck to her guns. Probably the thing that Sally Scales believed in the most was Salmon Arm. And she was, even before she started as a newspaper person, she started as a booster of Salmon Arm. She wanted Salmon Arm's fall fair to be successful. She wanted Salmon Arm's hospital to be good and the teachers to be paid fairly. She wanted Salmon Arm to be on the map. Many, many years ago at, I believe it was Okanagan College, Les Eleanor had written, an English teacher, and had talked about having a sonnet contest. Thought that was another way to get Salmon Arm on the map. So she was part of hosting the sonnet contest every year for years. And right up until the day she died, she was in favor of being identified with Salmon Arm and successful Salmon Arm.
Al Oster, the Yukon Balladeer, was born on December 3, 1924, in a one-room house on a homestead 12 miles east of Vanguard, Saskatchewan, to John Harold and Mary Oster, the oldest of four boys. He grew up listening to country radio stations on his parents' Zenith battery-powered radio, and it wasn't long before he bought a guitar and learned to chord Western songs while working in Alberta logging camps in the winter and on cattle ranches in the summer. He moved to Langley in 1939 to escape the Dirty Thirties in Saskatchewan, a time of severe drought. He roamed central BC and western Alberta as a genuine singing cowboy and ranch hand. Over the next 14 years, Al served in World War II and was discharged in Calgary, where he earned the early stage name Calgary Slim. He wrote a handful of country western songs and toured the BC interior with Mike Harris and Lynn Gibson as vocalist and rhythm guitar, but it was one tour with Hank Smith that led to him first seeing the Yukon. The two were touring Peace River County and decided to take a few days off to go north up the Alaskan Highway. Robert Service, the man who wrote The Shooting of Dan McGrew and The Cremation of Sam McGee, and is widely considered the man who canonized the Yukon in Canada's collective imagination, described a sort of spell the Yukon has on people. It took some people years of living there, but for Al Oster, it was instantaneous. When Al got back to Langley, he convinced his wife, Mary, into moving north. It was a 10-day journey over the rough, cold road, and it ended in Whitehorse on July 30th, 1957. At the time, Whitehorse was at milepost 918, and this journey inspired his song, 918 Miles. Al worked at Campbell's Lumberyard and then Hoogan's Hardware Department, while also playing in a country and western band with Johnny Hustle, John Irwin, Annie Donas, and Cal Waddington. Every now and then, though, the group would dip into that new sound, rock and roll. Al wanted to write a song for the high school crowd they sometimes played for, and Midnight Sun Rock was born. This would later be included in the Nashville Rockabilly Hall of Fame in 2002. Al also wrote the song Next Boat, about how everything in the Yukon always seemed to be coming in on the next boat. Al recorded Midnight Sun Rock and Next Boat on a single 45 RPM record, his first release. The first order of 1,000 of them sold out. They would be re-recorded in 1959 on Al's first album, Yukon Gold. In 1958, WHTV, the local White Horse television station, began a cable service, and the manager, Bert Weibrew, accepted Al's proposal to start a television program. The Al Oster Show ran for 2 years. Al worked 5 evenings a week at WHTV as the first announcer and operator, while working mornings at RCAF base as a clerk. In 1961, Al was offered a radio show on CBC called Northland Echoes with John Hostel and Gary King. It lasted 3 years. Also in this time, he wrote Waltz of the Yukon, which this former Cub Scout can remember singing around the campfire. Al started touring again with Jack Dewall's band, and they developed the Yukon Gold Show, where they had an hour and a half of singing, magic, comedy, and Johnny Cash impressions. They traveled most of Western Canada, promoting the land of the Yukon. As he was touring, Al Oster started writing his Paddle Wheeler song, which would later be covered by Stompin' Tom Connors. Al was never much one for the touring scene, though, and spent a lot of time in the producing and publishing end of music. His first records were self-produced through Klondike Record Co., a company he started with his wife. In 1960, he started Northland Music to control the royalties of his songs, and in 1965, he started Alcon Records in Oregon and Washington to handle U.S. and Alaskan sales. In 1967, Al Oster performed with Hank Carr, a disciple of sorts of his, at the Canadian Pavilion Expo 67. He was invited back for Expo 70 in Osaka, Japan, but was unable to accept. In 1975, Al moved to Salmon Arm. He ran a CD and DVD duplication service in town, but kept going back to Yukon each year just to see how it was, and still is. Al was no stranger to awards. He was the first Canadian composer to receive the BMI Canada Certificate of Honor Achievement Award. In 1993, he received the Yukon Heritage Award from the Yukon Historical Museums Association, and in April 1999, he was appointed a member of the Order of Canada. In 2002, he was recognized by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth XI for his musical contribution to Canadian history. In 2012, on June 15th, he was awarded the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal, which he is quoted as saying, "It's the greatest honor you can receive in Canada. Everything else is just gravy added to it." Al passed away on October 27th, 2017, of natural causes, at the Salmon Arm Memorial Hospital. He had recorded over 70 songs about the Yukon and the frontier of Canada and helped create the foundation for many recording artists from the north, making him forever part of not only Yukon and Shuswap history, but all of Canada's. Thanks to AlOsterYukon.com and HooganGroup.com for their comprehensive biographies on Al Oster, as well as the Salmon Arm Observer for their obituary on the man, and an article on his receiving of the Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
My name is Dorothy Rolin. I'm the current president of the Salmon Arm branch of the Okanagan Historical Society. If you have stories or memories you'd like to share with this program, please call Voice of the Shuswap at 250-463-5026 or email info@voiceofthesuswap.ca. Discovering and sharing Shuswap history.
This radio program was made possible by a Government of Canada New Horizons grant, helping celebrate Canada's 150th anniversary.